This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Everyone, welcome to Wright's House. I hope you are all safe and well. Today, we're going to talk about wins for Manchester City and Arsenal, plus defeat for Liverpool in what has been a huge week in the Premier League title race. We'll also look ahead to the North London Derby and the Women's Champions League semi-final second legs. And my guests are Flo Lloyd-Hughes and Ryan Hunt.
Whoop.
Hey.
Whoop. Before we start, the live show, Ryan. What's the details?
Yeah,
give out the details. I'm really looking forward to it. Are you looking forward to it?
I can't wait. Nice. We're back when we were last year.
Was it King's Place?
King's Place.
Yeah.
I think we're in a different room than we were last year, but same building. Ian Wright.
Yeah, I'm going to be there.
Florence right, Lloyd Hughes of Wright's House of Counter Press fame.
I'm going to be there. It's true. The rumours are true.
Musa Kwanga. Fellow of many things and co-host of the Stadio podcast and myself.
Right,
so us four are going to be very much like, you know, we will be there.
We will be there, man.
We will be there. Thursday, 2nd of May, King's Place.
Yes. Come check us out, man. Let's have a drink, have a chat.
We'll put a ticket link in the bio.
Yeah.
So go check that. But yeah, it'd be fun. Come chat.
I love when we get our sofa, like laid back armchair vibes going. I always feel like it's a different kind of show when we get to sit in big chairs and with a microphone rather than around the studio.
It feels different because we're doing it and it's so personal. It feels so close and just us-y, if that makes sense. When you're in there and then you just see all those people.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel the same in respect because it feels so close and personal, but now you've got an audience of people, which I always find quite intimidating when I start.
And there's always more people there for Writers' House live shows than when we do Stadio live shows because we usually do small ones.
So. Hey, you sell out though.
Absolutely.
Don't do yourself down. You always sell out.
But I think, you know, if there's going to be a big crowd there, I'm going to come out like Freddie Mercury at Live Aid.
Oh my God. Can I tell you about
I might wear a vest.
The new drama I've got. With the cats.
What have they done now?
Because they're allowed to go out now. They're allowed to go outside. Wow. And so for 3 nights, I've had to be looking for cats outside. The latest I was out was 2:15 in the morning.
Why? Because they're not...
They wouldn't come back.
But, what you need to understand is...
We've got a little...
Nighttime is when cats are most active.
Yeah, but the thing is...
So you can't fight that. You can't fight their inner catness to just want to go and explore.
I never want to fight the catness. I never want to fight their inner catness. The thing, what I want to fight is trying to get them to come back in at 6 o'clock.
But they don't want to. This is when they're living their best life.
What? Just let them live, man.
Because no. They'll come back at like 5 a.m. Yeah, and then they'll sleep all day.
But what about the fact that they're just now going outside? They're just learning, this is outside. Will they know where their house is?
Yes, that's what makes cats very special. They always know where home is and you have to set them free. They're ready to leave now. They're ready to go. You have to, as a dad, just trust them and say, go out into the world and do your cat thing now.
Just like, can I just say the levels of cat dad going on here are very cute, by the way.
They're ready.
I just want my cats to be okay.
I just you know, because there's foxes in the garden and you hear that foxes
are... But they can hold their own. They can hold their own. I believe in them.
Dude, wildlife is everywhere, man. I saw two geese just walking down the pavement, like down the street in town the other day. I was just like, are you all right?
Well, you know London foxes. You know, these people, it's a cat-eat-cat world. Everyone will survive.
Yeah, but I've seen...
Some, they can rough it up.
There's some tomcats lurking around. I know what they're doing, the tomcats. I know what the tomcats are doing. And this is what I'm worried about more than anything else. Because I'm hearing a lot of screaming at night from the cat community. A lot
from the
of screaming.
Cat community.
But that's what they do. They're just scrapping and, you know, marking their territory.
And they're sleeping together because I can hear the noises. And I'm worried about my two little cats.
But are they spayed? You got them neutered.
Yeah, but I still don't.
Well,
want
then
them
it's fine. They're practicing safe sex. It's fine.
You've got to let them out in the world, man. This is, come on. I know it's tough being a cat dad, but you've got to stand. If you love the cats, let them live.
I'm so worried. I can't tell you. They've been out for just like the last 5 days, and I can't sleep unless I know they're in the house. And now when we open the back door, it's like you open the back door and you have to look around to see if they're there because they're just out.
This is what my mum's like.
Freedom.
And this is what happens when you become a cat parent. They just it takes over your life.
Listen, I just worry for them.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA, I make calls, I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it, you can work out in it, you can go outside, you can go shopping down in your local, wherever, and you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
Do you know what I'm worried for?
Go
Man
on.
City looking ominous, man.
What this
Man
is what City I was going to say last ominous. Night.
Never mind your cats. I'm worried about Man City.
But probably that's what made me start to worry about the cats again, because it was that time of the night where I couldn't find them, but we got them a lot earlier. But like it was Man City when they scored. Well, the first one, it was like, you know.
Yeah.
That's it. You know what
that's
was
it.
Really...
It was done. It was done.
Yeah,
it
was 100% done after the first goal, which came in, what, like the 17th minute? And I was like, okay, great. I'm over it.
Mm.
I did keep it on, but it was...
It's just you keep it on because you're hoping. But look how
no,
many
not
people...
because I'm hoping, just because it was something to watch. But then it was not even a fun hate watch. It was just boring. I was just bored.
Oh, here we go.
I hate to say it. And, you know, maybe there are some Manchester City fans that listen to the pod. But I really...
I don't think so.
Probably not. Mm. But I really,
not at this stage of the season.
I really just find it boring. And I know there are ways that there are reasons we should bask in the glory of Pep football. And... Kevin De Bruyne's header was magnificent.
It's his first header he's ever scored.
Great.
That was magnificent.
I think he's first
no way.
Header he scored.
Ever?
Yeah.
Apparently
first
so.
Header
wow.
in the Premier League, yeah. What a header as well. You know what? What's good about that header and made me realise he doesn't even really score headers, but he scored arguably from the distance he was out. It was like, it was perfect because the way he headed it, he had to head it low on the ball so the ball would pop up and go over the guy from where he was in that top part of the net. It was like the accuracy of what he's done with somebody that doesn't head the ball or hasn't scored, and that's the first header. It was unbelievable technique. And you think, when that happens, you think, yeah. Well, that's it. I'll tell you what it was like. Remember Robin Van...
It reminded me of a cricket catch.
You know
like
what it
was? Same technique.
Yes. Do you remember Robin Van Persie in the World Cup when he scored that header where...
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Spain.
That is that kind of header, but like this one was even closer. But like when that happened, I thought, phew, amazing. But you know... What was good about it, when you say as boring as it is and whatever, watching Phil Foden in that mode is pretty entertaining. His touches on the ball, his movement, you know, obviously his goals and everything, but watching him now, we're watching something happen here. This man is awesome.
Is he in the shout for Player of the Year, do you think?
I think he's got to be. He's got to be in Player of the Year, probably Cole Palmer, you know, Young Player of the Year.
Yeah, Young Player of the Year, maybe. I think the cool thing about this year is that there's not really a runaway winner. There's been so many good performances, and a three-team title race, I think, has opened it up.
Declan's got to be in that race, surely.
Yeah. I mean, there's loads of people who could be in there. Like, lower down the table as well. I think that's the cool thing about this Premier League season is that there have been some amazing performers up and down the table.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it's going to be just from someone who wins the league.
I'd hope not. Same as the manager of the year. You'd hope that would be a thing as well, where it's not just about somebody's... at the top end.
Yeah. So another brace for Phil Foden in this game, and then Julian Alvarez with the fourth for City sealed it. Brighton are funny, man. Like,
they had a lot of players missing Brighton.
Yeah,
this
they
is why
have,
it was really strange
they?
Listening to Jamie Redknapp saying that, this could be a tough one because we know how Brighton play and this and that, but without taking into consideration who's missing and what a team like Manchester City does to your team if you've got anyone missing, let alone the main guys, what you've got missing. You know, top guys.
Hey guys.
You know,
top
so
guys.
I couldn't see any other outcome.
Oh yeah,
no and, other outcome in the game, also, and that's probably why people are moaning about.
You saw within the first few minutes how the game was going to play out because Brighton were very sticking to their principles and wanting to play it out from the back in tight spaces and
they didn't have the pace to get behind them for me.
Bait a bit of a Man City press, but they didn't have the quality to do that, and they were already getting themselves into trouble. And Manchester City's press is so good that it was quite clear early on that Brighton was sort of living on the edge. And then it unravels quite quickly and they just continue to play the same way, which is fine, but it won't work against certain teams, and it certainly didn't work last night. But the Phil Foden thing does make me very excited for the Euros because there are so many players who are in form that I hope will carry on. I hope they're not going to sort of exhaust themselves too much. But there are so many England players who are in really good form right now. And I think, wow, if it all comes together, especially for Phil Foden at the Euros, it could be quite exciting. It could be very exciting, right?
I was gonna say, there's not really much more to say on Manchester City. I was gonna just skip into the Merseyside derby. And how wonderful it was. What a great game.
Wow.
And it's not just a great game. I'm not saying it's a great game because Liverpool lost, but it was a great game because of the occasion. And you got a team that was fighting. And with the way
First time they've won a derby at Goodison in 14 years since Mikel played for them.
That's how you want a team to be playing. A team that's fighting relegation.
Not anymore.
And not anymore, no. That team was fighting relegation, coming up against their nemesis. And neighbours and bitterest rivals and, you know, who are going for the title themselves and bringing it, man. Calvert-Lewin was unplayable. Kanate had to get taken off. I was WhatsApping me and Roscoe, and he was talking about he weren't happy with certain things that Calvert-Lewin was doing. I said, no, man, don't worry about Calvert, man. He's bringing it tonight. They couldn't deal with him. Kanate couldn't deal with him. He was too rough.
The interesting thing about, like, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is that this is the kind of performance, or this performance is of the player that we think he should be.
Yeah.
And that I know he's had injuries and stuff like that. And I know that it's been a bit of a struggle at Everton over the last few years, especially with, like, under Ancelotti, he
amazing
absolutely came alive. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, wow, this guy's amazing. Like, Ancelotti looked like he unlocked
that box. The way he attacked that box under Ancelotti.
Yeah, and the variation in finishing as well. Mm. Like, he really seemed to blossom under Ancelotti. And then, obviously, we've talked about what's happened to Everton since, and it's kind of been a little bit all over the place. I think Sean Dyche is... I think he's a good manager for Everton, I think. Mm. I do think that that's a good fit, and I think he was also, I thought, would be a good manager for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And I think it's been a bit of a struggle for him this season. I kind of wonder why, and I wonder whether that's down to just the general dysfunction around, whether that's had an impact on all the players anyway. But this is the kind of performance of the player that we think he should be, because he has all of those tools in his locker.
Mm-hmm. He's somebody that if he was fit enough, if he could last out a season, the way he played, especially last night, that says to me he'd give any defender in this league trouble, any of them.
Trent really struggled.
Yes.
The way he defended that.
Yeah, but the thing is, you do not, again, Calvert-Lewin using his strength there, knowing that I don't care who he gets on the back post with there, he's going to probably win that ball. You know what I mean? The mere fact that it might have been Trent and he knew, he was up so high, no one was going to stop that.
The first goal as well, I just thought was so, so much like a goal that is scored in the opening stages of a game like this, where one side is fighting relegation and the other side is fighting for the title, where it's like, just give up. This is going in somehow. Mm-hmm. Just give up. It was like the whole pitch was tilted downhill.
And the ball was so the ball could go across. Yeah, but you see the vigour in which Calvert-Lewin tried to take that goal.
I know. Brilliant.
That says to me, he's back on it. His head's in the game. His head's in the game, but like...
Would you have done that? Is that the kind of thing you'd do?
Yeah. Because it's... Yeah.
Absolutely. Run off being like this. My goal. Run off being like, my goal. Sorry.
You see players running to each other talking about what's just... Yeah. Was that mine or was that yours? No. It was definitely mine. I just got it over the line. But obviously that was Jared Branthwaite's goal. But like, yeah, you do that. But like the main thing for me is what I got from that is the hunger from Calvert-Lewin in that game until he came off. Must have been delighted to see him come off. Because they put Konate to play for that reason, for the physical aspect of it, what is going to happen. And he absolutely just, he was winning everything in the air. His link-up play was brilliant. His running of the channels were great. You're just looking at a player, like you rightly say there, Rai, that the player that we are expecting to see at this stage, because let's face it, if he was fit, if he was continuous through the season playing games like this, there's no way that he's probably, he would be in the Euro squad. He'd be in there. Because he was the one that they spoke about before Ollie Watkins, before Ivan Toney. You know, it was Calvert-Lewin if he was fit. He was the one that was coming in. So you just hope now, you really do hope and pray for his sake, he can have an injury-free run.
Yeah.
It's frustrating that the season is ending now because it feels like if he actually had a little bit more track, a little bit more road to build his form up, he would give himself a chance. Yeah. But he's just not got enough games. And I think it's frustrating because... there were moments earlier in the season where I think he was really unlucky. And because he did need a run of game scoring, that it just never came, the form never built. But do you remember that goal? Was it against Newcastle at home? It was a 12:30 kickoff on TNT. Or was it against Manchester United? And he had a goal disallowed because of VAR. I'm thinking months and months ago now. And for me, that was the goal that I thought, this will pick up his form because he was so desperate for it at the time. And then without that, especially as a striker, as you'll know, without that goal, it just doesn't build any momentum for you. And then it always felt like he was chasing and then Everton's form really dipped. And now it just feels like, he'll probably have a really good end to the season.
Yeah, he will,
but it's not quite enough time. Yeah. And then he'll go on a break to build it in. And that's, I think it's really frustrating for him.
I see him scoring in the next few games as well because he's in the mode. You can feel it. I can see it as a striker.
There's no team in the Premier League that has a bigger discrepancy between their expected goals and their actual goals scored.
What, than Everton?
Than Everton, yeah.
They've been really wasteful. They've been really, wasteful this season. And I think that's been the frustrating. I mean, Sean Dyche talked about it after the game because obviously there's the points deduction stuff. And I think he's handled that quite well because it's also like above his pay grade in that he doesn't want to talk about it too much and focus on where they might be. When he talks about where they might be, he talks about it in the context of if they hadn't have lost the games that they had or they hadn't have missed all those chances, which I think is really important because I don't think they're a fantastic football team. I don't think they play great football, but they have created enough chances to be in a better position than they are, even with the points deduction. So I think that must be so frustrating as a manager. And it puts them in a good spot for next season once they get a fully fit squad and, you know, just make the most.
Also, since he changed the tracksuit, two wins. Two wins and two.
Yeah. Take the suit off, man. Get involved. Get in
track there. Tracksuit. I am here for tracksuit Dyche.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Get your feet on the grass with trainers or boots, man. Get your feet on the grass. Get on the sidelines.
Love that for him.
Yes. Look, talking about chances, Liverpool in the last few games, you talk the chances. And, you know, it was interesting because, you watch a game like that where, you know, Liverpool fans, and you could feel like they felt like, well that's it. It's done, especially the way we've been playing recently. And listening to Jamie Carragher and listen to Jamie speak about Darwin Nunez like he did, it makes you realise he's right. Remember on here...
I didn't hear what he said. What did he say?
No, he was just saying about when you're when you're a player of that level, you've scored that, you've cost that kind of money. You've come to Liverpool. It's 2 years. You're in a title chasing team, and you're missing the chances like he's missing. You think to yourself, if he can't take those chances at this stage of his Liverpool development, where those chances are what you're really paying £85 million for, you have to take those chances. And he's almost saying, did you hear it, Flo? He's almost saying he's not going to be the one.
There was a really long post-match chat. I think Kelly Cates was doing well because I think they were waiting ages for Klopp and Deutsch's interviews. But there was a really long debate between Sturridge, Rooney and Carragher about Nunes and his future, because Sturridge was saying that when he was a player, he would have been out there after training for hours and hours just to build that form, and he would get one of the younger backup keepers out, he would get some defenders out, and he would try and create some match-like conditions to try and get his form. And they were sort of talking about whether Nunes has done enough to try and build that momentum and that form, but also whether that then, where does his future lie because of that? Because Carragher, I agree with him. Nunes does all the right things. He works exceptionally hard. You can see that. He causes defenders a lot of problems. But the fact is, his finishing is not good enough.
His finishing is poor. The chances that he's missing at the start of his Liverpool career are the exact same chances he's missing now. That says to me there's no progress in him. He doesn't seem to be working, like Flo said. He can't be working on himself, because composure is something that you can easily get through muscle memory of doing that in training with somebody. When you're here, right, how am I going to finish? Let me put a couple of cones over that side of the goal. So if I'm attacking the goal and the goalie's covering his near post, I have to go across goal. I don't have to blast it at him aimlessly. I know there's a lot of space out there. If he gets his foot or something on it, then you can say, Jesus, I didn't get it far enough over. But then if he does save, it might go out and somebody else taps it in. But for you to miss the target on the near post, or you blast it straight at a goalkeeper in the near post, that's something now for a striker of that level. This is just like basic. It's basic. Just blast it.
Do you think there's a thing though between, because I was looking at FB Ref and they have like the goals that people have scored compared to their XG. And like, it's really interesting. The top five after basically what we've just been talking about is super interesting, because Dominic Calvert-Lewin's top. So there's a difference of like 5.3. Then it's Darwin Nunez, 4.7. Then it's Nicholas Jackson, 4.4. Beto from Everton. So Everton two Everton strikers in the top five. And then the fifth is Erling Haaland. So you have this, this thing where the best strikers, or the people who are going to be creating more chances, are also going to be the ones who are going to miss more chances. There's often like whoever misses the most chances often comes out as like the golden ball. Do you know what I mean? Or the golden boot, sorry.
It's the same with Sam Kerr as well. She's someone who always creates so much, and that's why there's always a kind of that weird narrative around her missing so much, is that if you are getting a really high supply, you still could be scoring goals but missing a lot of chances.
You see, with the thing with that list you mentioned there, right? The one thing is with Erling Haaland being in that list is fine, simply because it doesn't affect the team too much when he misses those chances. The only thing that it affects is people saying, he's not all this. And we hear what people say about him. Oh, he's not. But the fact is, you listen to the other guys. When you listed the other guys, it costs their team.
Yeah.
It costs them. When you, Darwin Nunes, who's a player in a team that's challenging it, he should not be, he shouldn't, with the chances, he should be nowhere near that. He should be flying.
I think Liverpool have struggled a little bit with a high turnover, well, a big injury crisis this season in multiple positions. And I think in that front line, it's been really difficult to find any level of stability within that. And they don't really have, without Diogo Jota, they don't really have I know he's a different player to Roberto Firmino, but they don't have that kind of
link,
that kind of glue player in there. Yeah, it's all quite chaotic. And if you have these kind of three, three elements kind of just going, you kind of need someone to be a little bit more, not calm, but I think that
composed.
the one who isn't there purely to score goals. I think the problem with that Liverpool front three is that like they're all expected to score. Whereas even in the past, even though he was playing at number nine, Firmino wasn't expected to score. You know, out of the three, he was always the one who would have the lower goals per season.
Yeah.
But like in the kind of, you know, the discrepancy of the XG thing, just off the top of your head, how do you think, if you were playing now, would you be someone who's like, yeah, Ian Wright scores a lot of goals, but he also misses a lot of chances?
No, you go through phases where you go through a 5-6 game where you're not scoring. But I don't remember like, you know, missing glaringly obvious, like, oh my God, he's just had a brain fart with that finish.
What's the worst miss you've ever had? if you remember it, I feel like you would have blocked out your mind.
No, no, no. It's not even that you remember it. Because I said, I do the Premier
League
show.
Love this question, Flo.
No, it's a good question, Flo. But I said to the Premier League, listen, some of the times, because they show the goals, I said, why don't you find some of my misses? Because I'm always going, find some of my misses.
That's a flex, you know. I'm sorry.
And I said to find some, and some of the misses, what they come with, I said, that's not a blatantly glaring, obvious miss like you know, Nicholas Jackson's header or Darwin Nunez running through and blasting it straight at the keeper. No, they can't find those.
So I go like Al Pacino in Heat. You're like, give me all you got. Give me all you got.
You know what I mean? And sometimes they come with misses and I said, yeah, I can see where I can miss that. But that's not like, oh my God, did you see the chance he missed? I can't remember too many of those, man. And you know, I'd love people if they can find them.
Wow.
I love when you say, don't you dare drag me into Darwin Nunez. Don't associate me with that man.
Find them so I can say, oh yeah, I remember that one because I can't remember. I can't remember.
Only someone who's in the Premier League Hall of Fame can move like that. I'm sorry. Sure. Like,
best shot. If you come at me, you better
please.
Not miss.
Yeah, come at you. No, I'd like,
you know,
people
fucking
to see
Omar in The Wire just walking down the street,
you know,
whistling.
You know the thing with it is, right?
Everyone's just, right, he's coming, right, he's coming.
Why would you remember your major misses?
Well, that's the thing.
And if they are major misses, you won't forget them. I think
I remember the worst miss, though.
The worst, don't say Italy. England versus Italy in Rome.
No, mine, not yours. That's what I'm saying. I remember my worst miss, and I didn't even have a football career. So it's like...
We're talking about the miss, right, Flo, where, you know, like everybody, when it comes to you and it's in that place and everyone goes, well, that's a goal, and you miss it and people go...
Are we talking a few yards out kind of thing?
We're talking about, yeah, that's it. Like, for instance, like, let's talk about Chelsea, like, and the chances, like what I'm saying about chances that you have to go in on goal and it's muscle memory because the goalkeeper's there. Nicholas Jackson's miss where he hit into the side netting was easily one of the worst misses I've seen from a professional footballer simply because of the time he had, the place he was in the area, where the goalkeeper was. It's basic. It's page one that you have to go over there because that's where the goal is. That's, you know, that for him, the lucky thing from his point of view is he's young enough. So you want to see in another 18 months time, if I remember there was like 8 months ago, he's missing chances like that. You're hoping that happens for him because even with the first half, when he missed that one where his arm came up for some reason, I don't know if Ali McCoy was saying he thinks that he was going to get kicked in the face. I don't know, because that would have been weird because he would have used the other arm to cover it. But the header, what he missed there again was so, it's so basic. In the ball was perfect. He got in front of the defender and he contrived to miss it some way. And those are the misses I'm talking about. Misses where people expect you to score. Like the Arsenal fans would have, like they would have gasped because they think, oh my God, they're going to score. And then he misses it. He goes through and he misses it. That thing costs you. It decimates the team in respects of confidence. Because what do you have to do to try and keep you're keeping a team out and your forwards are missing blatantly easy chances that should be getting you in the game, getting you back in the game.
But that's the thing that's really frustrating for Chelsea fans, is because that's been the story of his season, really. Bar that ridiculous Spurs game, he just hasn't been, he's been in the right positions, he's created chances for himself, he's had chances being put on a plate for him, but he hasn't been effective at all at taking those chances. And you can say the same for probably a lot of players in that Chelsea side, bar Cole Palmer. And having talked to a few Chelsea fans after the chaos of Tuesday night, which it was one of the worst performances I've seen from any team this season, and I'm including bad
Chelsea
championship teams. Yeah, really, really bad. I thought they, bar that sort of 10-minute spell in
where
the
they didn't
in the
recognize
first
that,
half,
they, that Arsenal were like bending and
yes, when Arsenal were a bit shaky and Chelsea were on top for about 10-15 minutes and they didn't capitalize on it, I thought Chelsea was so, so poor. The second half was abysmal. And I think for so many fans, it's this frustration about having got themselves into this situation where you've got a top coach and players that have been presented to him on a plate that arguably a lot of them weren't better options than what were in the squad before. And now I just don't understand how you fix this mess. And I think that's sort of been an issue they've had throughout the whole season, is there's been real fine moments where you've seen them play well, maybe the League Cup final that they ended up losing, parts of that semi-final in the FA Cup against City, these moments where they're on top, but they, bar Cole Palmer standout performances, they just don't control games, they don't capitalise on games. And you've got too many moving parts of young players, a lot of expectation, who, when I speak to Chelsea fans, they say they should be one, there should be one inexperienced young player who is the expensive young hot prospect. It shouldn't be a whole team of them. And there were more experienced players who understood the culture, identity of the club, how to play, who probably would have been a better option than this kind of mismatch of young potential all-stars that they've got right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the Nicholas Jackson thing is interesting, though, because I kind of wonder what people expected and what people want, right? He scored 18 goals last season for Villarreal. He scored 18 goals this season for Chelsea. Mm. So it's not like he's not like a one-in-one striker.
Not.
And but also I think it's such a, I think this is the thing about Chelsea this season is that, I mean, you know, going back to what we were talking about before, if you actually look at like, I don't know, it's like whatever, that's not a way to judge football, but they're creating chances. If they put their chances away at the XG level, right, they'd be way up there. It'd be like fourth.
Yeah. But that's
so finishing has been another problem
about,
for them.
Yeah.
But I think that if you look at, but this goes down again to just, you kind of pull that whole team apart and the thing that Chelsea don't have is, and this is just stuff we've talked about a million times, but they don't really have anyone who's kind of been around that now and done it and like won with that side that much, apart from like Thiago Silva. Ben Chilwell a bit, but he's in and out of the team. He's injured a lot. Reece James is obviously injured a lot.
Raheem
Sterling only came a couple of years ago, but he's won stuff with City, but he's not even like locking down a first team place. And the thing I thought about Chelsea actually on Tuesday, because Flo and I were both at the game, was that in the first half, I actually thought Poch set them up really well. Because they just pinned like four on Arsenal's back four.
Back four, yeah.
And it created a bit of an issue for Arsenal in terms of, like, because where we were sat, the back four was kind of in line with us. Mm-hmm. And you could hear them kind of passing and shouting to each other, like passing players on. And also it just created a little bit of a problem in midfield because there was just a giant gap. Mm. And I think Arsenal had to second guess a few times about when to press and where to press. And Chelsea got out like a few times.
Yes.
And I was a bit like, there's a plan there, actually, without Cole Palmer. And I think they allowed them, I think actually Cole Palmer not being there allowed them to play that way, because they could kind of, I think that was the way that they were going to hurt Arsenal. If they were going to try and like outpass Arsenal in midfield, they would have just got torched. That's just not the way to do it.
Ryan, I agree with you. I think there was a plan. I don't buy the Chelsea have no plan thing. I think there's a clear plan, but I think there's issues with the personnel that are expected to execute the plan. Because I agree with you. I think, and this is what's frustrating for Chelsea fans, is that the expectation shouldn't be on someone like Nick Jackson to be getting 20 goals in a Premier League season, because it's not realistic. And that's the frustration, is the players that have been and gone who potentially would have got you there, but you're throwing in young, expensive prospects and expecting them to deliver straight away with a team that has to be competing for the Champions League. It's not realistic. I think there were elements that could have worked in the way that they approached the game on Tuesday night. But then when you don't take your chances, the game flips. The scenario is that you're 3-0 down, and then it's like, what's the point? And obviously, you know, the game gets on top of
it. You know what?
Just a quick correction. Sorry, I think I said 18 goals for Nicholas Jackson. I meant 13.
I was going to say, I was like, surely not 18.
I think,
13, sorry.
Scoring, was it 17 for Villarreal? It's no mean feat. Obviously, you know, he's got 13 for Chelsea, but when you say not realistic, Flo, I totally understand, because of his age and coming to the Premier League, and you know what I mean, he's still got a lot to learn. But you still have to look at the chances that he's missed. And it's not like, you know, when we're talking about I'm not talking about, oh, that was unlucky, or he's made something out of something. Like when he blasted down the line and blasted past Saliba, and you think to yourself, wait a minute, maybe this guy should come off the wing or something. Looks like he could do more damage. But it comes down to the caliber of chances he's missing.
He's missed huge chances. And but it comes. I think it comes to the territory of throwing a younger player. This is his first season of the Premier League into the mix. Is maybe it's not the most surprising thing in the world.
I just think that if he took those, we'd be talking about him differently because you see so much from the rest of his game, his pace. You know what I mean? Sometimes his hold up play, and the only thing that's missing, unfortunately, is the clinical. It is a clinical finishing to his game. He's got to be clinical, and the thing is, it's not hard chances to be clinical for, because if he takes those, he gets the leeway to be able to learn the game, miss maybe a couple of chances, but take those ones. Because if you really look at Chelsea and the way they've played, and even like you mentioned, there was a spell in that game for about 15 minutes where they couldn't take advantage of the fact that Arsenal looked a bit tired, a little bit like, what's going on here? But then Bamley came at second half and finished it off. But I think that Chelsea, if they had taken us, like you say, right, they would be way up there. We'd be talking about Chelsea in a different way. And I don't know if it's a good thing for Chelsea, because if that was whitewashed with what we're seeing about how they are together, because it's not like they're playing unbelievably and scoring, but they are creating chances. So we wouldn't see the frailties as much as we are now. But now they're not scoring goals as well. We're seeing everything, because you look at Caicedo and Enzo in there. What is that?
And this is the thing, it's almost like you can't have both.
I don't know
you've
what
gotta
that
have,
is.
You've got to have
yeah.
one.
Yeah, like
and,
you said, yeah.
And I just don't understand. I think Poch is a brilliant coach, and I think Chelsea getting him was a massive, massive positive. But it's now this almost, you have to try and force all the pieces of the puzzle together for the sake of it, because that's what the ownership group wanted in the transfer strategy. But it's either Poch has to go and there has to be a huge overhaul in the coaching situation, which I don't think is a good idea. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be probably more sort of recruitment in the summer to fill the gaps and sell loads of players to fix that transfer issue. Or both. I mean, the challenge is so huge for them to, I think, fix the problems that they've now created. And I don't almost see a short-term way out. I think it's going to be a slow burn to get to the end result that they need, which is Champions League football and pushing for a title.
Mm. Let's talk about Arsenal.
Yes.
Biggest win over Chelsea ever, 5-0. Chelsea's second biggest top flight defeat in London, Flo, after a 6-0 defeat at Flo's beloved QPR in 1986.
I remember it well, / I wasn't born yet.
Can I be honest? Before my time.
Not only was I, once I heard Cole Palmer weren't playing, you're thinking, well, I don't know what they're going to do now.
Gusto as well.
Yeah, and Gusto. That's what I was going to say. Malo Gusto missing as well. Two of their top performers this season missing. I thought Arsenal, in current form and the strength of mentality right now, I couldn't see any other outcome. Apart from that 15-minute spell where Chelsea, and they had the chances. Apart from that, I was thinking, this is a game for us to really say, right, we're serious about what's going on. And that's why when they came out in the second half and Ben White scores, then you kind of relax. But I'm thinking, yeah, that's what we should do to that Chelsea side without their main player. That's what should happen, even though they've missed chances. Even if they scored those chances, I'd still think we're going to win those games. It's almost, I was as confident about us winning that game as Man City beating Brighton. I really was, but then...
Ryan called it so early.
Before the game.
Tell what you said, what'd
you
Ryan,
say,
before
Ryan?
The game.
Because
I think I just said we're going to hammer them.
Yeah, Ryan said we're going to batter them.
Yeah, but you know what I always say, Ryan? I'm worried. And that is only that, and you know what I was worried about? That 15-minute spell. And again, I know I'm kind of going on about it, but if they take those chances, you see a different kind of like, you see a different Arsenal, because what we're going into, a Villa headspace. So this is what was worrying me. So this is why when we came out in the second half, you know, and Ben White scored, Ben White was sensational in that game. Can we talk about Benny White for a second here, please?
Can we?
Yes.
Can we?
Yes, because I know he's your guy.
I love him, man. I think he's my favourite Arsenal player. I think I say this every episode at the moment. I think he's my favourite Arsenal player now. Yeah. I think, do you know what? I think he might be my favourite footballer in the world, actually,
right
Ben
now.
White.
Wow.
Right now.
That's
yeah.
saying
because,
something.
Why?
Because what? What I love about him is after the game, he's interviewed and he's asked about that goal and he was just like, yeah, just a bad touch, really. He's sick, man. Like, no one, you know, like, do you remember the game at Stamford Bridge and Mudrick was just like, everyone was just like, oh, he definitely meant that. He definitely meant that. And he, you know, no one kind of said that it wasn't a skewed cross, right? And I just love how Ben White does this volley that from where we were sat looked like an unbelievable goal.
Oh, yeah.
Mikel's like, what have I just seen? All the players have got their hands on their heads and he's just running around being like, didn't mean to do that. And then just comes straight out afterwards and he's just like, yeah, I didn't mean to do it, basically. Bad touch. And he's, because he's that good that he can kind of be like, well, yeah, bad touch, went in, but whatever.
We played some really nice stuff.
Especially, I think the build up to that Ben White goal you're talking about, like there was some really nice build up play and some goals that didn't go in that had unbelievable. What was the one that the in the second half with the back heel that I can't remember in the box and then the, it wasn't put away, but that would have been an unbelievable goal. There was just
Declan Rice's little kind of turn in the first half that we were right behind and they won. I was like, please go in, please go in. But yeah, just Arsenal just played some really, really good stuff. And I think on that day, on that those kind of days, you see, you know, with a new midfield as well, if you think about it, a midfield that hasn't been given the chance to play together, you kind of see this like, oh, okay, I can see how, like, this feels like a team that, or the kind of team that Arsenal should be, in the sense that beginning the season or midway through last season, you wouldn't really imagine at this point, when Arsenal need to win every game, that Martinelli wouldn't be starting.
No.
But Leandro Trossard has come in and just played so well. And I thought he was really, really good again in this game. Mm-hmm. Kai Havertz, like Tim, a shout out to Tim Stillman, who said something on Arsenal Vision about how we get so preoccupied by what we feel that we should be, who we should be buying or the kind of skills that we should be buying, that we overlook some of the skills that the players already have. And he noted the Havertz goal. Mm-hmm. When he kind of just breaks through, great through ball by Martin Ødegaard. Oh, yeah. Probably should. I mean, there's a foul on Madueke early on. Like Gabriel's just like,
how's he not giving that as a foul? He's literally wrestled him down.
I know, it's so bad.
Come on, man.
But Tim Stillman said, if we'd bought like Vlahovic for 80 million and he'd done that, everyone would be like, that's what we paid the money for.
Yes.
You know, or the same. And the other example he used was Gabriel Jesus's work for the Trossard goal against Wolves.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what we bought a striker for, that kind of physicality in the box. You know, and it's like, well, actually, no, we've got the players to do that.
We've got players
they
do
may
it
not
bits.
Do it all the time, but actually the combination of all those players means that we don't really need to buy one player who's just really good at this one thing at the moment necessarily, because we're the top goal Arsenal top goal scorers in the Premier League and they've conceded the fewest goals. Like there's not a lot really that you need to fix in quotation marks.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with trying to feel what could make it even better, for sure. Is it's like, I think it's like leveling up a little bit, not like, oh my God, we need this. It's just like, no, you see how this team has evolved over the last couple of years. And it's just the next part of that evolution, who that will be or what that will be. I'm not necessarily, you know, for example, a year ago, I would have been like, let's get Victor Osimhen to Arsenal. That will be amazing. Mm. Now I'm kind of like,
ready?
I'm not so sure, actually. And I wonder whether it's going to be in the summer that I don't think Arsenal are going to get any real, show-stopping transfers. I think they're going to be really smart, kind of like, oh, okay, that's an interesting signing.
I hope
someone
we can do
gradually
something,
level
right.
up.
I hope, right, we can do something what really activates our left side like our right side is activated.
Don't get Mbappe.
get Kylian. Something that can just like, really, so as we can have both sides, so as then it's not all on this right side and Saka. Yeah. And you know, as soon as the ball's going over there, you know, then you see the whole team going across, people doubling up on him quickly. He's got to cut back in and pass it back inside. We need to be able to blast that on the left side as well, especially when you've got Declan, you know what I mean, over that side, because you've got someone like Thomas Partey is the holder, and you've got Declan linking up over that side who can run with the ball, you know what I mean? He could pass it through the lines. If you can have somebody else on the left side, I know we've got Trossard at the moment, and at the moment, left back, you know, I don't know what's happening with us at left back at the moment, whether it's Kvyat, Tomiyasu, or Zinchenko. If we can get our right side going, bro, I'm telling you, man.
I mean, Jurrien Timber's going to defend like no one else. He's going to score like no one else down that left-hand side, just cutting inside and banging one in the top corner against Blackburn in the under-23s game? Yeah, I agree, man. I think that there'll obviously be some people going out as well, but...
Yeah, it's good. It's exciting at the moment because we're really having a go and I'm really pleased how it's going. Obviously, I can't lie about how devastated I was deep down watching City go 1-0 up and then 2-0 up and then you think, right, okay, now I've got to move on to the next game. that we have to win.
I was going to say, how are you feeling about this weekend? Because I think it's a nervy time. And the games that Arsenal have played, there was obviously the win last season at Spurs Stadium, which was really important because of what happened the previous season. But there's just this sort of energy that obviously the North London Derby now has with such a big crowd that feels really intense. And at this point in the season, Spurs fans are frothing at the mouth at the prospect of causing an upset.
Yeah.
It's like, obviously, they're relishing the opportunity. And Spurs are so inconsistent and have been so inconsistent this season and frustrating, I think, for a lot of their fans. They now see it as their optimum target is to try and get something from this game. And I think it could be the same for City. Mm. I think Spurs will cause City problems, but it makes these two games for Spurs really, really interesting.
I think this one's a really interesting one to see exactly mentally where we are, how mentally strong we are. Because this derby, there's a lot riding on it for us in respects of winning or losing. If we lose, it's probably over.
Oh, I think if Arsenal lose, it's definitely over.
I didn't want to say definitely, right, because I don't want to commit myself to any kind of definite.
I've got the crowded house queued up.
You're right. So I'm just feeling like we are, like you just rightly mentioned, Ryan, best defensive record, you know what I mean, scored the most goals in the league. We're playing very, very well. So why should I think of us going into that game and worry about anything other than the fact that it is a derby? You know, Spurs are going to come at us in a way because they can stop us. But Spurs are going for the top four as well. So they've got something on it. But what I'm quite confident about is if Spurs get it wrong in any way, as much as it's a derby, and they'll try a lot harder than maybe seen in different games, even though they are conceding a lot of goals, you know, we'll punish them. And if they get it wrong to a point where we can get control of this ball, we will hurt them. This is what I'm looking to see. This is what I want. It's actually what I want to happen. Because I don't think we're going to panic going into that game.
No.
Because we're calm. I think we're very chilled at the moment in what we're doing. We're back on track, you know, in the way we're playing. We know we have to win this game. Just though City has to do that. We can't let City cruise. You know, they're already in that mode. They've got the game in hand. Everybody expects them to win. I think it's against Tottenham, isn't it? The game in hand.
Yep. At Spurs as
right.
well.
Yeah. At Spurs. And we know that Spurs can cause them problems. So me, in that dressing room, I'm doing everything I can to make sure that I win the game and take the emotion of the North London derby out of it if you can. That's the way I'm thinking about it. I'm trying not to think of it like that because we have to still focus on the fact that we have to win the game. It's irrelevant of what's going on around us because it's the derby and we cannot lose. We mustn't lose. And that's the only thing I want us to go into it thinking about. I don't want us going in thinking about old Tottenham and this, and we just got to win this game.
The thing about Arsenal this season is that they've constantly been playing under pressure. Whereas I think last season what we saw is when the pressure really mounted and we started losing players to injury, everything kind of just went. Whereas this season, they've consistently past those little tests, I think. There have been times we've slipped up, for sure.
Yeah.
But apart from, I think, maybe the Fulham game and the Villa game at home, I think there was a little run of games that Arsenal lost before Christmas or around the Christmas time when they were actually the better side and should have and deserved more than... They deserved at least a point from a load of those games.
That phase we went through where we couldn't score.
Yeah,
couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. And I just feel like this is a team that doesn't look like they're going to be intimidated going to Spurs.
But this is what I'm hoping.
And they didn't look intimidated last season. I mean, the 2-0 at Spurs last season was very, very businesslike and actually a bit like, okay, I can't remember the last time I saw Arsenal be this calm at Spurs. Mm.
But I think the good thing for Arsenal at that point is that it came in January and I think it felt like there was a different sort of pressure. Whereas I think point in the season, you know what's good about that Villa result? As obviously absolutely gutting it was for Arsenal fans and completely understand that, it probably does actually relieve a bit of pressure because now it feels like this mental sort of target of we cannot lose, we have to see out the season and win everything. It's almost like the loss is out the way. Mm-hmm. So the only way is up because I think it does maybe relieve a little bit of that pressure about perfection. And now you know that you're best is all you can do because City have that advantage. And I think that probably actually might help things because it's always been so hyper-focused. And I think, but the environment of playing Spurs right now at this point of the season, that's an intensity that will be... It will be a lot.
I texted Seb Stafford-Blore from TIFO just to see. I said, because he's a Spurs fan, and said, what are you thinking about the derby? And he replied saying, relaxed, ordinary, I'm conflicted, but Hamburg season is over and St. Pauli should have enough of a buffer to perform. And I was just like, no, dude, I meant the North London derby, because we were talking about going to the Hamburg derby as well. So
what did he say?
1-1. He reckons.
He thinks 1-1.
Mm.
I think I'm so excited about it because going into it with the Arsenal players going into this game knowing they have to win the North London derby and they have to win. They don't have to win it in any particular way. They just have to win it. We'll say a lot about how much they've moved on. You know what I mean? From last, people was talking about but anything that happens, like when the Villa thing happened, they said, "Oh, the same thing's happening." Last season we lost, I think we won 1 in 5 around this time. And this season we've won, what is it, 4 now? 4 in 5 or something like that? 3 or 4 in 5. So, you know what I mean? Of course we've moved on. Why are people dragging us back to that place? Like we've got braces in a football net. We can't move away. You know what I mean? It's like fucking talking about. We have moved on. And this is why this game is like against Tottenham in a derby. It couldn't get any more on the line for us. Tottenham need to win it to make sure that they can try and get into the top four, stay in there, whatever it is. But like, I feel good about my team. I feel good, man.
Do you know what's really important as well? I think like it's Arsenal need to keep winning because it means that Man City will be behind them until that final week of the season.
I think
psychologically, that's quite a big... Because Arsenal have been playing... and having to respond so many times a season, it's actually really important now to be the people who set the tone. Because you can only win your games, right? And it's massive, massive cliche, but if we can push it till the end of the season, right in the final week.
That would be amazing.
Because I still think both teams are going to drop points at some point.
I really think City will drop points against Spurs and Forest. I don't know if they'll lose those games.
I don't know.
But I think they'll drop points.
Is Forest at Forest or is it at City?
Is it Forest? After this week, Forest are going to get 9 penalties on Sunday.
But I just... I think I agree with you, Ryan. I think there's places that people may stumble, but I think it takes on a slightly different environment now because I think it feels like a bit more of a free hit for Arsenal with the Villa situation out the way of, you know, the way that the pressure was so intense. You could feel it. It was a physical pressure. It wasn't just a mental pressure. It was in everyone's bodies. And I do just think the way that they bounced back against Wolves, the manner of that win against Chelsea, the win against Chelsea created a relaxed environment because it was enjoyable. It was fun. It was, you know, it was still a London derby, but it was almost silly, you know? Mm. And I think that silliness builds momentum that could be important for these last few games.
Well, we'll see because it's something. I'm so looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to this derby.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on cars.com.
This episode is brought to you by hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Can we move on to the Women's Champions League, Chelsea?
Yeah.
Barcelona. So Barcelona, Chelsea. I was so impressed with the way Chelsea played, to the point where Bonmati came out and she was saying about Chelsea played. I swear to God, it's perfect. Chelsea played dirty. You know what I mean?
She was rattled.
Hang on a minute. They were slowing the game down. You know what I mean? We're talking about a player, a great player. Let's have that right, straight off the bat. A great player that is complaining because a team that got hammered by them in the Champions League final before has found a way. Chelsea stifled them, choked them, you know, and then they're complaining. I really do hope that Chelsea can see that out. Do the same thing. What did they expect? I was saying Chelsea dirty tricks and staying down and wasting time. What did they honestly want them to do? Let people like Bonmati, the best player, the best woman player in the world, to just like have free reign? Erin Cuthbert was immense, man. I just want to talk about how great I thought Chelsea were.
Well, I also just found it really ironic that a player from Spain, who probably were the inventors of shithousery and the icons of game management and time wasting, came out to complain about what they thought were dirty tricks that, hey, people learn from the best at how to do this. So I thought that was kind of
ironic. They took the sting out of it, Chelsea.
But that's what you have to do. Yeah. That's football. You manage the game and you time waste. We've all seen it before. It's just how the game works.
Frustrate them because they want to get on the ball. They want to play. They want to do all their stuff. If you've got to do these things. I remember when I was younger, watching like the World Cups and watching Euros and watching teams, you know, just like watching players going down, you know, wasting time. You know what I mean? Just causing problems, just stopping people, you know, when they're through, just fouling them. It's what happens in the game. You've got to find a way, because I love watching it. And then I love just seeing the quotes, simply because Chelsea have learned, listen, we've got to have this, man. You fucked around with us the last time in the final, 4-1. It was embarrassing. You killed 4-0 in what, 20 minutes or something crazy it was. You know what I mean? That's not happening again. We're here and you're going to have to beat us. You're going to have to beat us. It's going to be interesting to see how Barcelona play now, because Chelsea should do exactly the same thing.
It's going to be relentless.
In their
face. It's going to be relentless from Barcelona. And I think it's going to be really interesting how Chelsea manage the game, what approach Emma Hayes takes, because she'll probably want to try and be able to have the same game plan. But it's hard to see Barcelona being that poor again. So I feel like it's going to be an onslaught of attacks. But I think if Chelsea can just deliver as good as a defensive performance as they did last weekend, then they should be able to see it out. But it's whether Barca get... My sort of way I see it potentially going is that Barca do get a goal and then it ends up going extra time or penalties or something like that.
I want this one for Emma. I really, really do. I can't lie. It's spilling over.
Do you know what? The one thing I'm a little bit worried about for Chelsea is that this wasn't a group game.
Well, they're going to be out for blood.
They're vexed.
They're going to be coming out being like, you poke the bear.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think things are different now. We spoke about this a lot on Counterpress, but I do think that the win against Arsenal at Stamford Bridge was really important, not obviously just because of the manner of the result, but it was an important atmosphere, Stamford Bridge culture moment, because it was a big crowd, there was big energy that actually ended up coming because of the ridiculous sock situation. And I do feel like if they can channel some of that, and last year at Stamford Bridge, against Barcelona, it was this really rubbish early kickoff. There was zero atmosphere. Barca score early, takes the sting out of the game, and it was pretty dull. Whereas I think this is slightly later kickoff. I think people will be up for it. It's going to be a bigger crowd. There's something with the energy that feels different. Chelsea got a little bit of that with their penalty shootout win against Lyon last season, where it was really, you know, the atmosphere and the energy was there and it was a really good night for the team. But I think they'd be missing a sort of like Champions League night sort of iconic moment outside of that Lyon penalty shootout. And it feels like this is potentially building for that. So if the crowd also play their part in creating the hostile atmosphere, and Chelsea can still game manage and wind up, which it feels Barca are there for the taking in that capacity. Because Chelsea did well of just breaking up the game very quickly and making it a little bit stodgy, and that played into their hands. If they can do that again and really just try and limit those opportunities, because it's hard to think Barcelona will miss that many like they did in this game, or they didn't create enough good opportunities anyway, they just, it has to be perfect. And that's what's so hard against playing this team.
What about the other one? PSG, Lyon.
This is a fun one. I have no idea how it's going to go. PSG threw away a 2-0 lead with 10 minutes to go, which was ridiculous. End up losing that first leg 3-2. But PSG are at home. And again, it's going to be a really big crowd. The PSG ultras are loud. They're intense. Yeah. They're hostile. And PSG, if they can try and rattle Lyon a bit, who I don't think are the best side, they've got really good individual quality. But PSG have at least a clear identity, which is they want to play on the break and play at speed. It's just, again, about who can finish their chances. And I don't think either game had the most immense equality in terms of the quality of football, but it was teams that sort of muddled their way through by taking chances. And I think Chelsea were good at what they delivered.
Just quickly on Chelsea, is it a full house at Stamford Bridge?
It's nearly 35,000
sold.
Yeah. How many?
35,000 sold
I think one of the things that you can't ignore in this is the fact that it's at home against Barcelona, and you don't get wrapped up in the occasion in the crowd. It depends on how you manage it, because you don't want to feel like, because the crowd want to see something, because that you do anything differently and try and go for Barcelona, because they'll patiently wait for you. Chelsea must not get involved in what the crowd are doing. I know you need that kind of atmosphere, but at the same time, you don't want it to be an atmosphere what pushes you outside of what you're trying to do, because you're over-emotional about trying to get this done because the crowd are so amazing and
You don't want to expose yourself and expose the space for Barca to the news.
I think that's going to be important, how they deal with their own crowd, you know, because going away and making it like that, yes, it gives you strength because you know everyone's against you and let's just stop them. But when you're at home, people expect a little bit more maybe from you to go and finish it. So it's going to be interesting how Emma approaches that, because they're very experienced and they're a very good team. You know, but the fact is they're not used to losing, you know what I mean? They win like 99% of their games or something. They're not used to losing, so you expect them to complain if people don't let them play how they want to.
I think it's going to be really fun as a neutral as well. I'm just really looking forward to enjoying the game and seeing how it unravels.
It's Emma's last game at Stamford
Bridge.
What a big one to go out on, beating Barcelona.
What's wild is that she could potentially be playing her successor in the final if Lyon
gets through.
Which would be narrative on narrative on narrative. So we'll have to wait and see. That would be fun.
I love it.
What a weekend of football.
Yes, I hear you. Listen, man, I'm probably have to leave now.
Okay.
I have to leave. I've got to go and do some stuff. So can I thank you for coming in?
Yeah, of course.
You can thank,
Thanks for coming
in. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
I'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Sunday. You and I doing Sunday?
We're doing Sunday.
Yeah, after North London derby.
Are we doing it straight afterwards? Is it a car one? It's not a car one, because we're not going there. We can't park outside Tottenham, bro.
Can you imagine?
Doing a podcast.
In this economy.
Especially if we've won. Oh, my God.
Good Lord.
Oh, my God. We should just do it just because. Just park a car up outside. White Hart Lane and do a podcast.
Let's maybe not do that.
Listen, we'll see you again. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks again, Flo. Thanks again, Rye. Take it easy. See you after the North London derby, everybody. Take it easy.